Mrs. Lirriper's Legacy by Charles Dickens. More stories of a London landlady in Victorian England. Episode 1, Relations Old and New, and a Domestic Disaster.
Oh, it's pleasant to drop into my own easy chair, my dear. Though a little palpitating, what with trotting upstairs and down. And why kitchen stairs should be all corner stairs is for the builders to justify. Though I do not think they fully understand their trade, and never did. Else why the sameness? And why not more conveniences and fewer drafts? Likewise, them making a practice of laying the plaster on too thick, I am convinced, which holds the damp. And as the chimney pots, putting them on by guesswork like hats at a party, and no more knowing what their effect will be upon the smoke than I do. Well, being here before your eyes, my dear, in my own quiet room in my own lodging house, number 81 Norfolk Street, Strand, London, situated between the City and St James's. Yes, I am still in the lodgings as a business, hoping to die in the same, and if agreeable to the clergy, with a service partly read over at St Clement's Danes and concluded in Hatfield Churchyard, lying once again by my poor Lirriper, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. Neither should I tell you any news, my dear, in saying that the Major is still a fixture in the parlours, quite as much so as the roof of the house, and that my Jemmy is of boys the best and brightest, as he has ever had kept from him the cruel story of his poor pretty mother, Mrs. Edson, being deserted in the second floor and dying in my arms, fully believing that I am his born gran and him an orphan. Mentioning my poor Lirriper brings into my head his own youngest brother, the doctor, though a doctor of what I am sure it would be hard to say unless it be liquor, for neither physic nor music nor yet law does Joshua Lirriper know a morsel of, except being continually summoned to the county court and having orders made upon him which he runs away from. Once he was taken in the passage of this very house with an umbrella up and the doormat wrapped round him and the Major's hat on.
Wicked ever so humble, there's no place like home.
Oi, come on, get off!
Unhand me, you varlet! I am Sir Johnson Jones, KCB, residing at the Horse Guards.
On which occasion he had got into the house not a minute before through the girl letting him on the mat when he sent a piece of paper marked
immediate and waiting for an answer. I am desperate. You have a choice between giving me 30 shillings in hand or see my brains spilled on the premises.
My dear, it gave me such a terrible, dreadful turn to think of the brains of my poor dear Lirriper's own flesh and blood flying about the new oilcloth, however unworthy to be so assisted, that I went out of my room here to ask him what he would take, once and for all, not to do it for life. It was then I found him in the custody of two gentlemen that I should have adjudged to be in the feather bed trade, so fluffy were their personal appearance, if they had not announced it was the law.
Come along now, sir.
Bring your chains, sir. Rivet my fetters.
Gentlemen, please, to bring him into Major Jackman's apartments.
Damn it! Sir, you scoundrel! Give me
thief!
Back my hat!
Major, be cool and advise me what to do with Joshua, my dead and gone Lirriper's only brother.
Madam, my advice is that you board and lodge him in a gunpowder mill with a handsome fee to the proprietor when it is exploded.
Major, as a Christian, you cannot mean your words.
Madam, by the Lord, I do.
Come, sirs! Remove me to my vile dungeon! Where is my mouldy straw?
Pardonnez-moi.
Certainly, madam.
Off we go again then, sir.
This has been done both several times and since. But I must remember that Joshua Lirriper has his good feelings and shows them in being always so troubled in his mind when he cannot wear mourning clothes for his brother. Many a long year have I left off my widow's warning, not being wishful to intrude, but there is a tender point in Joshua that I cannot help a little yielding to.
One single sovereign would enable me to wear a decent suit of mourning for my much-loved brother. I vowed at the time of his lamented death that I would ever wear the black in memory of him, but alas, how short-sighted is man! How to keep that vow when penniless?
It says a good deal for the strength of his feelings that he couldn't have been 7 years old when my poor Lirriper died, and to have kept it ever since is highly creditable. But we know there is good in all of us, if only we knew where it was in some of us. It was far from delicate in Joshua to work upon my dear Jemmy's feelings when he was first sent to school in Lincolnshire to write to him asking for his pocket money by return of post, which he got. Still, he is my poor Lirriper's youngest brother, and whether Joshua Lirriper will yet do well, I cannot say. But I did hear of his coming out at a private theatre in the character of a bandit without receiving any offer afterwards from the regular managers. I mention also, my dear, Mr. Buffle as an instance of there being good in persons where good is not expected. For it cannot be denied that Mr. Buffle's manners when engaged in his business are not agreeable. To collect money as the assessor of taxes is one thing, but to look about as is suspicious of the goods being gradually removed in the dead of night by the back door is quite another. Overtaxing, you have no control, but suspecting is voluntary. Allowances, too, must be made for gentlemen of the Major's warmth, not relishing to be spoken to with a pen in the mouth or with a broad brim hat kept on indoors. Besides which, without bearing malice or vengeance, the Major is a man that scores up arrears, as his habit always was with Joshua Lirriper.
Collector has called for 2 quarters of assessed taxes.
Sir, they are ready for him. Do you see a ghost, sir?
No, sir.
Because I have before noticed you apparently looking for a spectre very hard beneath the roof of my respected friend. When you find that supernatural agent, be so kind as to point him out, sir. Mrs. Lirriper, sir?
Pleasure of knowing her.
Jemmy Jackman, sir.
Honour of knowing you by sight.
Jemmy Jackman, sir, presents to you his esteemed friend, that lady Mrs. Emma Lirriper of 81 Norfolk Street, Strand, London, in the county of Middlesex, in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Upon which occasion, sir, Jemmy Jackman takes off your hat.
Oh! No, no, I say my hat. I'll have it back and on.
Sir, there are 2 quarters of the gallantry taxes due, and the collector has called.
My hat, sir, this is an outrage.
Take the bit that is your confounded pen out of your mouth, sir. Or by the whole infernal system of taxation of this country and every individual figure in the national debt, I'll get upon your back and ride you like a horse.
This is an assault, and I'll have the law of you.
Sir, if you are a man of honour, your collector of whatever may obtain what he wants in full at any moment by applying to Major Jackman at the parlours, Mr. Lirriper, as well, James.
Pray, let it go no further, gentlemen. I beg and beseech you.
Good day, then, sir.
The Major could be got to do nothing else but snort long after Mr. Buffle was gone. And when on the next day of Mr. Buffle's tax collection rounds, the Major spruced himself up and went up and down the street with one eye almost obliterated by his hat, the effect it had upon my whole mass of blood, there are not expressions in Johnson's dictionary to state. I got behind the Major's blind with my shawl on and my mind made up to rush out, screeching till my voice failed me, and catch the Major round the neck the moment I saw danger. I had not been there a quarter of an hour when I saw Mr. Buffle approaching with his collecting books in his hand.
Mr. Buffle, I believe.
That is my name, sir.
Have you any commands for me, Mr. Buffle?
Not any, sir.
Capital.
Then, my dear, both of them bowed very low and haughty and parted. And from then on, whenever Mr. Buffle made his rounds, him and the Major always met and bowed before the basement railings, putting me much in mind of Hamlet and the other gentlemen in mourning before killing one another, though I could have wished the other gentlemen had done it fairer and, even if less polite, no poison. Mr. Buffle and his family were not liked in this neighbourhood, for when you are an householder, my dear, you'll find it does not come by nature to like the assessor of taxes. And there was that domestic unhappiness in the family on account of Mr. and Mrs. Buffle being very hard with their daughter, Miss Robina Buffle, and one other, on account of Miss Buffle favouring George, Mr. Buffle's articled young gentleman. It was whispered that Miss Buffle would go either into consumption or a convent, she being so very thin and off her appetite. So things stood towards Mr. Buffle, when one night I was awoke by a frightful noise and a smell of burning.
Dress yourselves, fire! Don't be frightened, fire! Collect your presence of mind, fire! All right, fire!
Major, where is it?
I don't know, dearest madam. Fire! Jemmy Jackman will defend you to the last drop of blood. Fire! If the dear boy was at home, what a treat this would be for him. Fire! Where is it? Fire!
Oh, it's a lark. Old Buffle's been setting his houses alight to prevent its being found out that he's boned the taxes. Ha ha ha! Fire!
Oh, dear.
Don't be frightened, dearest madam. Fire! There's nothing to be alarmed at. Fire! I'll go and see if I can be of any service. Fire! Don't open the street door till I come back. Fire! You're quite composed and comfortable, aren't you? Fire! Fire! Fire!
It was in vain for me to hold the man and tell him he'd be galloped to death by the fire engines, pumped to death by his overexertions, went feeted to death by the slop and mess, or flattened to death when the roofs fell in. His spirit was up and he went scampering off after that young monkey with all the breath he had and none to spare. Me and the girls huddled together at the parlour windows looking at the dreadful flames above the houses over the way, Mr. Buffle's being round the corner.
Get the blanket on him. Bring him up here. Steady now. He is not a sack of coal.
Right, careful.
Steady.
You got hold of him, all right.
He's slipping.
Right.
One, two, three. Oh, dear.
Mr. Buffle.
Make way.
Let's go.
Who's next?
It's the lady.
Steady as she goes.
Mind the furniture.
Where shall we put her? Oh, my God, she weighs a ton. Right.
One, two, three.
Mrs. Buffle.
Make way.
Hurry.
Where's Fred?
I don't know.
Coming through.
Careful with her.
Where now?
Over there.
Right. One, two, three.
Miss Buffle.
Right, one more to go.
Where is he?
In the parlour, I think.
You sure?
Steady.
Blimey, he's heavy.
Oh, right.
One, two, three.
Mr. Buffle's articled young gentleman.
Right, where next?
Is that all of them?
No, there's more of them.
Yeah, let's get back.
All four were now sat in a row in the parlour, each in a blanket. Mr. Buffle, awful with his eyes rolling, and his articled young gentleman with his hair having the appearance of being newly played upon. My dear, we made him some hot tea and toast and hot brandy and water with a little comfortable nutmeg in it. And at first, they were scared and low in their spirits, but being fully insured, they soon got sociable.
Oh, my dear Major Jackman, you are our preserver and will forever be our friend. My dearest sir, let me make you known to Mrs. Buffle and Miss Buffle.
Major Jackman, you are indeed our honoured preserver and lifelong friend.
Mr. Buffle leaned up against Mrs. Buffle, being two bundles under the blankets.
We have not been an united family. Let us after this danger become so.
And I do not know that I have ever had a pleasanter meal than the breakfast we took together after we had all dozed, when Miss Buffle made tea very sweetly, in quite the Roman style as depicted formerly at Covent Garden Theatre, and when the whole family was most agreeable, as they have ever proved since that night when the Major stood at the foot of the fire escape and claimed them as they came down. And though I do not say that we should be less liable to think ill of each other if strictly limited to blankets, still, I do say that we might most of us come to a better understanding if we kept one another less at a distance.
In episode one of Mrs. Lirriper's Legacy by Charles Dickens, Mrs. Lirriper was played by S.J. Vant, with Jim Newberry as Joshua Lirriper. The policeman was Mark Smith, and Major Jackman was inhabited by Mike Ayris. Sid Moon was the officious Mr. Buffle, Lisa Nightingale, Mrs. Buffle, and the young boy was portrayed by Frankie Hart. The story was adapted and directed by Jim Newberry, with sound engineering and all audio effects mastered by Robbie Burgess. This is a joint venture between Old Dolly and Uptick Productions. In episode two, Mrs. Lirriper will again encounter her arch-rival, Miss Wozenham, and the revelation of her legacy creates a mystery for Emma Lirriper that can only be resolved by a trip abroad for her, the Major, and Master Jemmy to France.